You're listening to Lanyap, a weekly digest of news, personal finance, brotherly banter, and whatever else is on our minds. From Stokes Family Office.
All right. It is March 14th. Stokes Family Office Lanyap podcast. Another good week in the markets last week. This is from Ryan Dietrich from Carson Group. We're in the middle of one of the greatest 19-week rallies ever. Just remember, it isn't usually this easy, and even the best years have moments of fear and worry. We like to say volatility is a toll we pay to invest around here. This chart explains it all. It's a good chart. Just bring everybody back down to earth. This is S&P 500 various declines per year, 1928 to 2023. 3% dip happens 7 times per year. A 5% dip 3.5 times a year. 10% correction about once per year. 15% once every 2 years. 20% bear market once every 3.5 years. Anyway, that's the bad news. The good news is we're on a hell of a run for the last, really almost going on 6 months now, since it's really 5 months since the middle end of October. And and really it's twofold from a expectation perspective. Number one, economic data, it just comes in better and better. Earnings continue to be surprising to the upside. And as a result of that, the recession probability has been removed from the market. At least that's what the market is telling us. And stocks have gone on to eclipse where they were at the end of 2021 and after the bear market of 2022 and recovery of 2023. And so here we are moving on into 2024. S&P 500 is having a really great start to the year. And just thoughts on where we are right now, Greg, and expectations for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so there's predictive factors of recessions, and one of the most cited predictive factors is the inverted yield curve. And the inverted yield curve, I think, has preceded 8 of the last 9 recessions or something like that. And it was cited commonly. And what that means is that when the yields on the shorter end of the spectrum, like 1-year treasury or 2-year treasury, exceed the yields on a 10-year treasury. For example, the 2 and 10s is a commonly cited yield curve metric. So if a 2-year treasury is paying 5% and the 10-year treasury is paying 3%, then the yield curve is inverted. And a normal year yield curve is like when the shorter rates are paying less than longer rates. And when a yield curve inverts, meaning rates are rates on the shorter end of the spectrum are higher than the ones on the longer end of the spectrum, that usually precedes a recession. And there's a variety of different reasons for that. And usually that's because the Fed is raising rates, and Feds usually raise rates into a recession. But so that was all over the financial media a couple of years ago when the yield curve inverted. Something like, this is according to Reuters, the inverted yield curve no longer a reliable indicator for recession, said 22 of 24 strategists. So now, basically, this is there are people or and economists and people in the media or whatever are writing rules as they go. Same thing goes with any sort of stock price target or whatever. Tesla is actually, I saw last week that Tesla is the worst performing stock in the S&P 500 so far in 2024. And of course, all of these banks are coming out with their price targets for Tesla. They're cutting their price targets essentially. So now Tesla's $166 a share, and Deutsche Bank or whatever now says it's $165 stock from $220. The bottom line is that the data and any sort of indicator, there's such a limited sample size on from a macroeconomic perspective of how many recessions we've had in the modern era that you can never look at one particular indicator like an inverted yield curve or what have you and make a prognostication based upon that. And the narrative about whether or not we're going to have a recession and what's driving the market, the narrative of what's driving the market has completely changed over the last 6 months. The preceding 2 years was the opposite, that we're coming full long into a recession. Inflation was going to break the economy, et cetera. And that it just hasn't happened. And we could have a recession. It's not like I'm saying that's not going to happen, but you're right. The data just comes in better and better. And we had CPI and PPI, which is the purchaser price index, come in this week. CPI is the consumer price index. And this is from Colin Roche. The bottom line on this report is inflation is still in a downtrend, even though that inflation went up a little bit month over month. And as I noted at the beginning of last year, moving from 3% to 2% inflation is going to be a bigger struggle than moving from 6% to 3%. Additionally, the rapid pace of disinflation in the second half of 2023 created irrational expectations for the pace of rate cuts in 2024. The March and May cuts never made sense, and we remain in the June camp in terms of the first rate cut's going to happen. And that's basically what the market's saying. The market's pricing in about a 60% chance of a rate cut in June. Things are looking really solid, and the economy's on this positive trajectory, and the Fed has a lot of room to cut rates, and that should further bolster the economy. So we have a stock market at all-time highs, and we have a Fed that's going to be probably easing and making the economy more powerful, basically, in the near term. So the things are setting up very nicely, and the narrative has certainly shifted dramatically in the last 6 months, and the market's reflected that, obviously.
Yeah, this is from BlackRock's Asset Management Group. They say sales, earnings, and forward guidance from some of the largest names in tech have unequivocally crushed even the loftiest expectations. The subsequent price moves higher have been noteworthy, but contrary to conventional intuition, these stocks have gotten cheaper, arguably, as their breathtaking prowess at cash flow generation outpaces their current corresponding price appreciation. This adds fuel to our bullishness and persuades us to tilt more aggressively into growth over value. Far from FOMO, this is us simply recognizing the slice of the market with mojo, reallocating risk into the targeted cohort of stocks we expect will lead the market higher over the course of the year. It's a good insight in that when prices go up, your natural inclination is to believe that there's a reversion to the mean. What goes up must come down. What people don't realize is about some of these tech companies, whether it's NVIDIA or Microsoft or Facebook or Meta, even Google, their cash flows that they've generated have grown more than their prices have grown. They've gotten cheaper, even though they've gone up in value in aggregate. And so the narrative around just a repeat of the year 2000 from the bubble in that era, or even 2021, is not supported by what's actually happening at a net income and cash flow level. I got to find this posted in our notes. This is from CompuStat and FactSet and Goldman Sachs. Today's largest stocks traded an elevated but not record valuation. The largest 10 stocks in the S&P 500 traded 25 times earnings. They were 36 times earnings in 2021, 43 times earnings in 2000. So yes, are they elevated? Are they in bubble territory of 21 or 2000? Not so much. And then S&P 500, excluding the top 10 stocks, 19 times in 2024, 22 times in 2021, 21 times in 2000. Just remember, if you're in the camp that this is a repeat of the 2000 to 2010 era, everything besides the top 10 stocks did pretty well. I mean, if you look at like small and mid caps, especially value, there's always areas in the market that you can make money. And so even if you don't buy that these large cap stocks are growing into their lofty valuations, the rest of the market is not unattractive from a price perspective. So that's an area to be looking at.
Yeah, I'm looking at the S&P 500 earnings going back between 2023 and 1960. And to your point, in 2021, the S&P 500 closed the year basically around 4,700 or 4,800. And their earnings generated by the entire cohort of the S&P 500 was 206. And now the S&P 500 is like something like 5,100 or something like that. But the earnings is 220. And then it's probably going to be 5 to 10% higher by the end of the year. So while the market really, it's up, the markets are up, 8% since then. Earnings are up as well, too. And earnings are on a really positive trajectory for all the reasons that we're talking about. The thing that I found really striking about this is just looking at the earnings of the S&P 500 going back, you know, over various time periods. And you referenced 2000 and the, you know, the bear market that that followed that. But right now, I just mentioned earnings per share for 2023 was around 220. Earnings per share for the entire S&P 500 in 2000 was 56. So 25% of the size of the earnings generated. Going back even further, back to 1960, the earnings for the S&P 500 was $3.10. So it's pretty crazy the growth that's taken place on in the U.S. Stock market. But the fundamentals, the earnings that are generated by the S&P 500 companies has just really grown dramatically over the last 3 years, and the markets really haven't done a whole lot. It's 8% or whatever growth. But if you look back over various time periods, this machine of the U.S. stock market has just compounded on itself dramatically. And now the dividends that are generated by the S&P 500 are like 70. Back in the day, the dividends were like $1.98 in 1960. So if you shut your eyes to it, and this actually, I spoke with some clients a couple of days ago that gave me permission to talk about this, but not to use their names. But they told me the story about how they bought some Janus funds and a retirement account. It was a really small account, and they worked at this particular place for just a couple of years in an administrative capacity, and kind of forgot about the account, and not kind of forgot about it, about the account, but did forget about the account. And they got a notification from Janus, and the value of the account was $500,000. So it's just amazing what can take place over a long period of time, especially if you don't uproot the tree and do anything. But it's just amazing that the growth in the overall economy, especially if you've been in that type of asset class, which is like U.S. growth over the last 20, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, don't pick the flowers to water the weeds.
Right.
Is the expression. Another positive, this is from Torsten Slok, who's the chief economist at Apollo Group. He says, this is this morning, he has a daily note that he emails out, which most of the time is actually pretty good. He says, CRE, or commercial real estate prices, rebounding. With no signs of recession, commercial real estate prices are starting to recover. See chart below. This is helpful for regional banks and for the broader economic recovery. You can see a clear bottoming in everything but essentially office in the commercial real estate sector. And if the prices for whether it's, you know, industrial or retail or hospitality come back, or multifamily, that obviously helps with a lot of these banks that have either underwater loans from the perspective of that they loaned out at 3% when rates are 6 or 7 now, or at values that were, you know, incredibly high. We talked about this with Seth Johnson of 388 Ventures a few weeks ago. This is also not surprising, though. If you look at the Vanguard REIT Index from 2023, public markets typically are front run or get ahead of private markets, and you had a big rebound and the REIT index in 2023. You also had a big rebound in the office REITs in 2023. And so the slower moving private sector, the transactions that occur on a private basis are just happening in a lagging manner. And you're starting to see that bottoming forming in real estate and in privately traded real estate. And so another positive, as we have no recession, or hopefully no recession, and as rates are expected to come down, even though less than they were expected earlier this year, those are two good setups for real estate over the next cycle.
Right. And the other thing to take into account is the Fed, the old saying was, and the expectation was, the Fed is going to react when something breaks. And the banking system almost broke, obviously, last March when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed, and the one in New York, Signature Bank. The other prognostication over the last year was is that the real estate sector, specifically office, would cause the commercial real estate sector to break, and therein the regional banks.
This is wall of maturities. That's the everybody was talking about last
exactly.
year.
Exactly. So if all of a sudden that risk is taken off the table, which it's not off the table yet, but you're right, there is a clear sort of bottoming trend in that chart that you posted, then that's one other risk that potentially is off the table that could cause the system to break. And so obviously the risks that what we talked about at when that whole wall of maturities discussion was going on was that the risks that come to bite you are not the ones that you see coming. And that was one that everybody was talking about. So that's probably not going to be the thing that causes the system to break, because everybody's aware of it. It's probably gonna be something, you know, exogenous, like COVID was the last big thing that nobody was expecting that caused the markets to collapse or whatever. But in any event, that's one thing. If that particular risk is taken off the table, then that means there's more structure. There's a lot of regional banks involved in real estate. So that's one less thing that can cause regional banks to have issues. And that's overall the fundamentals in the economy at large would be positive. And then you're right, as far as when rates are cut, then that's another bolstering to that particular industry, because a huge percentage of the loans that real estate investors use to purchase properties are floating rate loans. Additionally, it makes the banks have been very restrictive in lending money out because of the uncertainty in the economy and in real estate. And if they loosen up their standards, it could make productivity in the real estate sector even better. So there's all kinds of positives in that particular side of the equation. So I think that it's another sort of positivity that's going on right now. A lot of reasons to be positive. I want to shift gears, Doug, and talk a little pop culture today. And I want to get your opinion on this, because it's been on a lot of family text messages that we've been a part of. But specifically, Kate Middleton has been, this will be the first Lanyap podcast where we talk about the British royal, the monarchy in Britain. But in any event, Kate Middleton, if you didn't see it, and this is actually covered by major news media, and I wasn't even really aware that she was not seen for like the last 3 months or whatever. But for some reason, the Kensington Palace decided to release a picture that was like doctored or whatever, and that caused all kinds of speculation about the health and well-being of the Princess of Wales. Doug, what's your thought? What do you think's going on with that, and under what circumstances would I don't understand why they would release a doctored picture, because that's just fueling the you know, all of a sudden, why now we're talking about it on a finance podcast?
Yeah, we're not talking about it. You're talking about it. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Leave it at that.
Leave it at that. You asked for comment. I have no comment. I'm not aware of the story.
Okay, right. You're gonna play stupid. Okay. So we'll go to another sort of pop culture, but not really pop culture, but just say overall sort of economic observation. The Southwest Airlines came out with a plan to cut capacity this year, halt most new hiring, and review its spending plans in response to reduced aircraft deliveries from Boeing. Boeing had obviously, we talked about this in the last podcast, but they had an emergency exit door blow off mid-flight on an airplane in Portland. There was a wheel that collapsed when a plane landing in Houston a couple weeks ago. This past week, there was a LATAM flight between Auckland, New Zealand, and Sydney, Australia, that people essentially, there's an article about it in the Wall Street Journal, but it sounded extremely scary, where there was a technical error where the pilot, this is a 787, a Boeing 787, the pilot, his systems went completely black for like 2 seconds, and there was like a drop in elevation in the flight, and people... In the article, it details how people went from their seats to the top of the plane and were floating for like a second, and then they fell down, and a couple of people were severely injured. So Southwest is dealing with issues. I was just looking at the price of Southwest. Love is the ticker, LUV stock, going back between pre-COVID and now. And I think pre-COVID, it was like $54, and then it collapsed after COVID came out because of the concerns that that travel wouldn't go back to normal, but travel has normalized. But there's just it gives me some crude. Warren Buffett has always said that airlines are horrible investments because they burn so much capital and they have to deal with unions or whatever. But this is just another reason that their main supplier of airplanes is having some major issues. It's a big issue from a global economic scale because, you know, we talked about this last week, but there's a duopoly in terms of who makes aircraft, Boeing and Airbus, and Boeing's having some major issues, and I hope that they get a resolve because there could be some major economic issues as a result if they continue.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I was talking about this at dinner last night with another couple that the most dangerous part of travel is the car ride from your house to the airport, statistically speaking. But you see these events that occur, and you think when you have a little bit of turbulence that that the likelihood increases when still it's incredibly safe to travel. I think it's been over 20 years since it's been a major event in America, and so I'm hoping that all of this gets figured out and there's a quick resolution to the what seemingly are more maintenance type issues other than that Latin American flight. But, you know, a wheel issue, for example, in Portland, that seemed like a manufacturing issue, the door flying off. But whether it's a running off the runway because of a wheel issue or something like, or like there's some gas coming out of one of the engines at SFO and they had to go back and land. Those seem more, these are older planes and those seem more like maintenance issues. But again, something that needs to be resolved. I think Americans need to feel like they're safe when they're traveling, which they are. But these stories are popping up over and over again. Not great, not great for Boeing. Not great for some of these airlines that are reliant upon Boeing planes, and not really great for national security and America as a whole to have your one major commercial airline manufacturer and in such trouble.
Yeah, I saw an interesting statistic about how safe flying commercially is, and there was like I think something over the last we're going to have to get like the actual citation on this, but basically, there has been like 20 commercial airline crashes in like the last 30 years around the world. And like 30% of those were caused by the pilot voluntarily crashing the plane. So there's been just so few, and obviously people are flying every single day, thousands of flights around the world. So it's just an incredibly safe proposition. But yeah, this is a huge public relations disaster for Boeing. And obviously there hasn't been any major there hasn't been any crashes or anything like that, but they've got to get this tuned up because it is a huge part of our economy for people to be able to feel safe traveling. But Doug, in any event, do you have anything else to add on this or any other topic?
I think we're done for the week. We are mid-March and New Orleans is about to gear up for festival season. We're all excited about that. And we'll be back next week and maybe give some NCAA tournament predictions as March Madness starts at the end of next week. But hope everybody has a great rest of their week. Give us a 5-star review, share with your friends, and help us grow the podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lanyap. This podcast is brought to you by Stokes Family Office. If you liked this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Stokes Family Office and Lanyap, visit us at stokesfamilyoffice.com. The information in this podcast is educational and general in nature and does not take into consideration the listener's personal circumstances. Therefore, it is not intended to be a substitute for specific, individualized financial, legal, or tax advice. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a final decision.